IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
All right, the HSC unfortunately has again this morning declined to put someone forward to answer a couple of simple questions as it relates to services at St. Joseph's Hospital, which is regrettable, but we continue to endeavour on those who are concerned behalf. Some of your comments in relation to that story. If the work in St. Joseph's Hospital needs completed, I'd prefer the physio appointments are relocated rather than the patients in the hospital being relocated. Another. Hi, Greg. St. Joseph's closing before everyone's eyes. Patients can't get physio for a start when they are not going to be in the building and the equipment all gone. Such a walkover. If people believe councillors and politicians that are misleading them, they knew it was happening and acting now as if they didn't. But they assure me they didn't. Well spoken, Father Lorcan and John. Only for your group and COVID, St. Joseph's Community Hospital would have been enclosed, would have been closed by deceit and by stealth. I hope this becomes a local election issue and that this essential service, as COVID showed, remains for generations. Please note, Charlie McConnell Logue did not save St. Joseph's last time with his attitude. Greg, unfortunately, government don't care about Irish people. They just house the rest of the world. By filling our hospitals with foreign nurses and doctors, we're depriving their countries of an adequate health service. We should be paying hospital staff enough so Irish nurses and doctors can afford to stay in Ireland. It's a colonial mindset to want cheap labour. And I put that point, actually, because it is one I've mused over before. And apparently, we are, in some countries, it depends where you're taking the doctors and nurses from, it does deprive that area. But in others, they have incredibly good education systems, and there is an excess in those areas. Even if you paid, increase the wages and what have you, there's always going to be Irish staff and Irish nurses that will want to travel the world. And even if they all came back, I read somewhere that that wouldn't be enough to meet our needs. They're closing down nursing homes everywhere in the country to house refugees. It's the elephant in the room. Well, there's private nursing homes, people that are in the private nursing home sector. You're quite correct, it is happening. They're saying, right, there's not enough money in nursing homes. We're going to switch our business to housing refugees. There's not an awful lot you can do. I mean, this St. Joseph's is a public building. It's HSC run. But there is no doubt that private nursing homes, that the owners of them, who are, you know, obviously businesses, have closed to patients and opened them up to other residents. There's just no doubt about that. Hi, Greg. Can we get the bosses of the St. Joseph's on your show at present to discuss the issues? They are the people who signed off on and are responsible for these decisions. Well, we've requested them, of course. That would have been one of the first things that we did. It's a total disgrace that St. Joseph's physio is being closed down. A family member attended recently and received brilliant treatment in a family modern, fully modern and fully equipped centre. Ballybuffet is a totally forgotten town. The HSC will be happy or won't be happy until the hospital is closed completely. That's according to Anne. All right. OK, just a quick mention of this competition once again, because it's a little bit more, there's a little bit more detail to it than other competitions. Just to let you know, you'll hear the trails going in and out of ads this week on the show. Thanks to our friends at Fondamania Fairground, coming to the Brunswick Movie Bowl in Derry, Londonderry, from the 1st of March till the 17th of April. We're giving you the chance to win incredible family passes for an unlimited fun and excitement. We are giving away two passes every day this week. So there's going to be lots of winners, which is exciting. And we just need you to identify this Donegal town off the back of these three clues. Mary is from here. The Waters Fort. It's a festival town. Text your answer, your name and where you're from, or WhatsApp to 086 60 25000. Just a bit of information about Fundamania, by the way. Everyone of all ages, get ready to experience the thrill of a lifetime at Fundamania, coming to the Brunswick Movie Bowl in Derry from the 1st of March to the 17th of March. You're being told to get ready to be swept away by the greatest fairground extravaganza you'll ever encounter, from heart-pumping roller coasters to adrenaline-pumping bumper cars. They have it all. Now, just to mention, a massive thanks giving for Bishop Alan McGuckian is to take place this evening in St. Eunan's Cathedral in Letterkenny. Bishop McGuckian will leave his post as the Bishop of Raphoe after almost 7 years. And the Mass of Thanksgiving will take place at 7 p.m. in St. Eunan's Cathedral to mark his departure, and is open to everyone. And I'm pleased to say, although not in the context, I have to say, because we've always had a good working relationship with Bishop McGuckian. But anyway, he's coming into studio tomorrow, or at least he's coming on the programme tomorrow for a chat before he departs to become Bishop of the Diocese of Down and Connor. And it's kind of interesting, and I presume this will come up in the conversation tomorrow. It's not that long ago that the Bishop himself had to deliver what was tough news to parishioners and priests, I'm sure, in moving priests from one area to another, and the challenges that creates on a personal level, and as I say, for the congregations and what have you. And now the Bishop himself has found himself being moved by the Pope, and it is part of the life. But we're going to speak to the Bishop about his time here, his reflections on his time here, and his hopes for the future as well. So I'm in looking forward to a conversation tomorrow with Bishop Alan McGuckian. We're joined on the programme now by Kieran Maguire, manager of the Columbkill Hostel in Letterkenny. Thanks for joining us, Kieran. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Kieran, for those who may not be aware, what is Columbkill Hostel? You know, what kind of services do you provide, and for how many?
We were set up, I suppose, 27 years ago by St. Vincent de Paul. They felt that there was a need in Letterkenny at that time. Any people that were homeless in Letterkenny were being taken into Derry, because that's the only place that there was a hostel. And they kind of felt, well, maybe, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we had a hostel of our own? So a group of people from St. Vincent de Paul got together and set up the hostel, which has become known as the St. Columbkill Hostel. And it deals with people that are homeless, and as I say, we cater for single people and for families. And we've been going for that length of time. The whole idea of the hostel, I suppose, is to help people to get their lives back together, mm-hmm. give them a help up, and move them into permanent accommodation. And as I say, it has worked quite well down through the years. I suppose when we started up at the beginning, we just basically provided accommodation for people. And we discovered after a short period of time that people needed more than just bricks and mortar around them. They needed a help to actually stay in their home. And so we decided to take on staff that would help people to help them with issues that they had that led to them becoming homeless, I suppose, originally. And through that, then, they were able to rebuild their lives and get back into permanent accommodation and stay in that accommodation.
That's a really important role of it. It's an emergency accommodation. So this is a stopgap. This is people that have found themselves without accommodation. It's a good, safe place where they can get back on their feet, hopefully, and then, as you say, move into their own rental property or whatever it might be. The problem is because of the housing crisis and everything else that's going on, is it getting increasingly difficult to have that, you know, to have that pass through? In other words, it's harder for people who find themselves in your great facility to find alternatives, more long-term solutions.
We're finding now that there's less and less private rented accommodation, because we depended really on the private rented sector to provide accommodation for people to move on. And anything that's there is so expensive that the people can't afford it anymore. And so I suppose we're logjam in that sense, because the people are staying longer and longer now in the hostel because we can't find move-on accommodation. We just can't put somebody out in the street and say, you're here now long enough, you have to move on. When people move on from our hostel, we have to make sure that they have somewhere to move to, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, as I say, we just find it harder and harder to find. So we work very closely with Donegal County Council and with the approved housing bodies such as Simon and Clewitt. And, you know, that's where our housing is. And at the moment, there's a shortage all around. So short of building more houses is what we really need, you know, more houses to mm-hmm. be built and more housing stock out there so that we can actually move people on.
And then
we can actually take people.
Kieran, it has to be appropriate accommodation as well, because, you know, there are those that might say, well, you know, we're housing others in hotels. Why not move people into hotels? But that's not the type of accommodation we're talking about here. You're talking about homes, a home, you know, a medium to long-term home for someone. The temporary accommodation is what's being provided by you guys at the moment. It's forever homes or long-term homes that we're talking about.
We're talking about people that are on the Donegal housing housing list, you know, and they're actually looking for their own home, really. I suppose in an ideal world, we would be able to provide them with that permanent accommodation. But in the past, as I say, it's the private sector that has provided a lot of the homes for those people, and we were able to use it. And again, as I say, move a cohort out and then take new people in and do a bit of work with them. Mm-hmm. And it worked quite well, and it was very successful as far as we were concerned, what we would call success, you know. Yeah. And then eventually they got onto the council housing list. So as I say, we depend totally now. Anybody that's moving from the hostel at the moment is moving directly into Donegal County Council houses. Mm-hmm. And whereas that's not good in itself, but again, slow. As I say, there's a limited supply there. And then again, anybody now that's on the emergency housing list, I mean, the council's putting them up in bed and breakfast and maybe hotel accommodation, as you say, or other hostels. And it's very expensive, and it's really eaten into the housing budget. So again, as I say, how do you get around that without providing more housing stock? So, I mean, it's down to the government, I suppose, at the end of the day, to provide more housing stock.
And the problem we have, Kieran, there's an awful lot of competing factors looking for the rental accommodation that's there, and it's limited. We spoke to a lady last week who just wants to be out on her own, but she can't find or afford accommodation. We've got people, and quite a significant amount of people that are exiting hotel accommodation that actually have resources for private rental. I'm thinking, you know, maybe Ukrainian families or what have you. I know personally that is happening. So, you know, maybe they have been able to accrue money, so it makes them very competitive in the private rental market. Then the other people that you deal with, people moving back to Donegal, like, there is an awful lot of demand and very, very, very little supply. It's going to take a long time unless there's a real move. It's going to take a long time to sort out, it seems, Kieran.
I would imagine so. Well, I know that the council has a big housing, you know, that they're actually making movement now with building and that, you know, and they have plans to build a good number of houses, both in Letterkenny and surrounding areas. And I mean, that's to be welcomed. But I mean, you're talking about a year or two before a lot of that will come on stream. So again, it's what we do in the meantime, how we will get over the initial people that are there now and need accommodation right here and now. Again, as I say, because there's such a demand and such a little supply, the prices are going up and up all the time. Mm-hmm. And again, as I say, I don't know how people that are in that rental market, how they afford the prices that are being charged at the moment.
Because they're putting all of the money into it, and that's just it. There's no money left over for anything else. Would you be in favour of, we've seen it elsewhere, but for some reason the government just aren't interested in doing up here, sort of a modular homing solution? Are we at that point that might be better than what we have at the moment?
I would say it probably is. I know that for single people now, the council's looking at the idea, and they have already piloted a few schemes at the moment where single people are, you know, they're sharing houses together, you know, where they get to rent a room and you put three or four people in the one house. Again, a lot of study has gone into it, and, you know, there's a lot of careful, I suppose, like with like. As I say, you just can't put four strangers in the house and tell them to get on, you know. You have to think very clearly and carefully about, you know, the issues that are involved and who they are, and know a wee bit about of their background and that. But again, it seems to be working, you know, in some areas, that some of the pilot schemes that they have tried. So, and again, it's certainly a lot cheaper than bed and breakfast and that, you know.
So, and
but modular homes probably would be a way forward, you know.
Yeah, you've been at this for 27-odd years. Is it as bad as it's ever been?
That's right, yeah. Oh, definitely, without a doubt. I mean, in the past, we've always been able to find homes for people. We've always been able to try. And again, as I say, when people contact me now, we have a list of numbers that we would, because we're full up, we have a list of numbers that we ring around to see, will somebody take somebody? And again, they're getting up to the stage now where they don't have room anymore either, you know. Yeah. And again, as I say, some of the people that are there, you know, they have their own issues and that, you know. And again, as I say, that's a problem in itself, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, because what's often not talked about the homelessness situation, and we'll talk about it on a national level, it's often not just simply a house or accommodation. There's other maybe wraparound services that are needed also.
That's it, yeah. And I mean, like, that's part of what we provide, you know, and that, again, to say that we would work with. And again, as I say, if we can't provide it on site, then we can refer them into different agencies and that to get the help that they need. So that at least when they move on from their accommodation that into permanent accommodation, that the issues that has led to them becoming homeless, you know, that they have been tackled in some form and they're on the road to a recovery or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So again, and that, from that point of view, it would be great to have just somewhere to move them to that would be permanent for them, you know. Yeah. And again, short of having more housing stock, I mean, that's where we're at now, you know. So again, it's down to government and government measures. Yeah. And it needs to be a lot of resources put into this, you know.
So your capacity now, I mean, is anything coming up or is it almost at a standstill in terms of throughput?
Well, as I said, the council has have plans at the moment for a number of sites in Letterkenny to develop. But again, as I say, you're probably talking about a couple of years before they'll actually come on stream. And I mean, they had council houses were probably built there last year. But again, with MICA and people having to move out of their homes, like a lot, it made very little impact, really, I suppose, on what few council houses were available. The people had to move out of their homes because of a MICA or whatever, and they took up a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it made very little to the numbers that are on the waiting list there on Donegal County Council.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kieran, listen.
And I mean, I find the council does great work with the resources that they have, you know.
Yep. Kieran, listen, thank you for the insight. I really appreciate it. Kieran Maguire, who's manager of the Columbkill Hostel in Letterkenny, he's never seen anything like it in 27 years for all the reasons that were outlined there. 086 60 25,000 if you want to talk about that. St. Joseph says a listener was meant to be one-stop shop for the elderly when the Sean O'Hare unit moved. Another, why can't physiotherapy be located at primary care centres? HICWA fire requirements are easily fixed. This is closure of our excellent local hospital by stealth. Move the offices, not the physio, and day hospital services that need to be reinstated too. Another, HICWA can also can use the excuse that a building doesn't conform to safety standards as an excuse to close the building down and remove the service. The same reason was used to withdraw services from other institutions and close them down permanently. But you know, at the end of the day, like, HICWA is there to make sure our family and we are safe and sound. I often think maybe sometimes it's what's done with that information that might be a problem. Okay, we're joined by two guests in studio now. Andrea McFeely, Clinical Lead and Coordinator of DS Champions Programme at No Barriers. Good morning to you, Andrea.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for calling in. I'm doing good. And also, David Hone, Activities Lead on the DS Champion. Good morning, David. So first we might start with you, Andrea, and just tell us a little bit about, I suppose, No Barriers, the programme, or whatever you think might be useful for us to learn.
So thanks very much for having us on today, Greg. We're really delighted to be here. Well, No Barriers stands for breaking down barriers in our communities and educating our societies regarding people with challenges and their function. We are really passionate about supporting people within physical activities, exercise, and again, community inclusion. So it's really important to us that we can bring everybody together, but within No Barriers and in our local communities, to participate in activities that are really meaningful to them.
And what type of people take part in the DS Champions programme?
Well, the DS Champions programme is a 6-week health and wellbeing programme. It's been created in conjunction with people with Down syndrome. So primarily you have a diagnosis with Down syndrome. The programme itself, Greg, has been designed and co-created with and for people with Down syndrome. We also have a therapy-led and therapy-informed content within the programme, which has been supported by occupational therapists, physiotherapists, speech and language therapists. We have a nutritionist and a cognitive behavioural therapist who has a background in psychology as well. We also have very experienced strength and conditioning coaches and an activities team involved in designing and developing the programme.
David, talk to us about your role in this.
Yeah, so I'm the physical activities lead. So the programme runs Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. So Tuesday morning we come in and we get all the team together and we'll sit down with everybody and just do like a question of the day, just to get everyone kind of relaxed and see how the weekend went and stuff. And then we go straight into our warm-up, and then we start our exercise class, which has been designed by S&C coaches and physios and OTs and speech and language as well. So we'll do an hour of exercise-based stuff, and then we'll break for lunch, which lasts about 30 minutes, and then we're into our nutrition talks, and then we might even go out for a coffee together, take the whole group out, go to Kelly's for a coffee, and may even go food shopping as well, and then we'll make something the next day as well. So.
And this is, it is in the round, isn't it? It's physical health, it's emotional awareness and well-being. There's a lot of science behind this, because there's a lot of, I don't want to make it sound over complex because the user doesn't see that, but from a background perspective, there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yeah. We're trying to cover all the pillars. Like, there's been a lot of design. We haven't had a lot of time to put all this together, but we've got an amazing team put together up in O'Barry's at the minute. And we're all working very hard. We're making tweaks each week as we go along as well, yeah.
In terms of how many people are currently enrolled and availability of space, Andrea, because people listening might go, oh, okay, this sounds like it could work for me or it could work from a member of my family. So it's up and running at the moment. How long is it running for, and how do people get involved?
Well, Greg, we're into the fifth week of programme one. We have 17 participants on this particular programme. Altogether, we will run three programmes, and we aim to have places for 60 people across the three programmes. So firstly, we have this programme facilitated for adults. Our second programme will also be facilitated for an adult population. And then our third programme will take in a teenage population. So people in or around secondary school age. So we're looking at, between 14 and 17 years of age.
And also there's an empowering element to this. Am I right in saying that some of those that have been in the programme are now working in coaching within it? Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're really excited about taking on board two coaches as part of our team at No Barriers Foundation. We will have somebody who's going to participate strongly as an S&C coach, again, fronting out on the programme to show that people with Down syndrome can take a class, lead a class alongside a coach at No Barriers Foundation. Again, really, supporting us within society to understand that we all have the choice and opportunity to be part of a team, to work, to be empowered, to show our skill set within society, and that we can do anything is possible. We have another participant who's going to lead out on our emotional well-being component. Again, looking at breath work, meditation, yoga, again, alongside one of our coaches at No Barriers Foundation.
Brilliant. So
it's
David,
really exciting.
What have you seen so far over the course of the course in terms of, I don't know, development or stuff that you've noticed to go, wow, this
is... Yeah, it's been amazing. Like, there's been a lot of people from all around Donegal, so people making new friends all the time, and just such a good connection. Like, they're very supportive of each other, and it's just been such a joy to work on. And it's kind of sad that we'll finish in this programme, but then starting a whole new group as well. But then we're going to add in classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4:30 for whatever people that are on this group that can come to these classes as well. So not really ending. Going to continue the journey as well. So
yeah, that's it, because people, so it's like anything, that we enjoy it, and then exactly.
Yeah.
But there's and is this a long term? Is this funded long term, Andrea? Because I know you did get a significant amount of funding, but you're talking about growing and reaching out other people.
Yes.
Is this being put in a footing that will give it a long term future?
Yeah. Well, we feel really lucky to have had this opportunity to take this funding and invest it in developing a really strong programme, really robust. Again, we've had input from people with Down syndrome and a number of allied health professionals. The funding for this particular programme lasts up until the end of June. And then after that, we would be hoping that, we would like to take this programme nationally to allow people and associations, Down syndrome associations across Ireland, to have the opportunity to participate in this programme. And as David mentioned earlier at No Barriers Foundation, we want this to be the beginning, not the end of a programme. What we want to do is incorporate lots of opportunities for people with Down syndrome to come to a class, either at No Barriers, or we will go out and support other gyms geographically in Donegal or across the country if that opportunity comes to us. There will be opportunities for self-funding for one-to-one PT classes as well.
And so a model is being created that didn't really quite exist before. So this is brand new, really.
Brand new, fantastic. And really exciting. Okay. And again, we want this to have a really strong community inclusion focus, supporting people with neurodiversity across the spectrum. People with a diagnosis of Down syndrome have a lot of advantages, a lot to offer our society, and we really want to give them the choice to be able to live long and healthy lifestyles through physical activity, through exercise, through understanding emotional awareness and nutrition.
Yeah, it's a quality of our lives too, isn't it?
And
longevity.
Life,
David, will you have to tweak it much for the younger younger participants?
The main pillars should be very similar, maybe a little bit more games and stuff like that there, but the core of it's there now. And we make tweaks every week, but only small little changes as well. So no, the core of it should be well there now at this stage. So.
You know, and the mark of success is what you see in the participants. Like, have you seen, people develop and
Well, the two coaches are like prime examples of that. So one of them leads the cool down of what we're doing at then. He'll do a bit of Tai Chi, get the whole group to follow him. He doesn't even say a word, but all the members just follow along. And it's just been amazing to watch, like, the development over like just 5 weeks.
Mm.
So, and then Meg as well, she's the S&C kind of protege in the group, so she is. So it's kind of good seeing her, like, she'll lead and show some exercises to the rest of the group. So yeah, it's been very empowering. Yeah.
Have you found that encouraging, Andrew?
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, other really inspiring feedback we've had from participants' families is that one of our participants had a really tough time through COVID. It impacted his mental health significantly. And his mum gave me a call there 2 weeks ago to say what a change she's seen.
Oh, wow.
He's brighter, he's more engaging, he's enjoying, really, really eager to get in, to come on the programme every day that he does come. Another one of our participants has himself even pointed out to us how much weight he's lost, how trim he's looking, how big his muscles are. And, everybody on the programme are really excited. Another mum got in touch to say that her son, due to the emotional awareness component of the programme, she's seen a big change in how he's managing his emotions. And
which is a long-term, hopefully has a long-term impact as well.
Absolutely. Like, it's all about relationship management and how you participate and make choices.
Yeah.
Really, we want to empower people to be able to make their choices, have gainful employment, have long-term better life, better health, and as you say, improve their quality of health, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how, presumably then in this age category, the course is set and what have you. How do, if someone's listening and they have someone in the age category 14 plus, I think you mentioned, for the next programme, how are people being enrolled or getting involved, or can they ring or contact?
So anybody who has a diagnosis of Down syndrome can come on the programme. If you're interested, get in touch with Donegal Down Syndrome Association. You can become a member for free with Donegal Down Syndrome Association, because the programme has been rolled out in partnership with Donegal Down Syndrome and Rethink Ireland. However, if you have a diagnosis of Down syndrome and you're not a member of Donegal Down Syndrome Association, that's okay as well. You can get in touch with Donegal Down Syndrome Association or with No Barriers Foundation.
Yeah. And just in terms of the development and growth that we would all have in taking part in something like this, David mentioned that unfortunately, this program is coming to an end. It would be nice, I presume, if there could be some sort of, the plan in the future, is it that there's something more regularly that continues, or?
Yeah, well, the classes will be up and running, and that'll be Tuesday, Thursdays at 4:30, and anybody can come along to those classes.
All right.
There'll be machine-based classes as well, so that's the plan at the minute.
Oh, brilliant. So if you've gone through the programme, then you can just start coming to the classes on the Tuesday. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, brilliant. So it's not a cliff edge as such.
Yeah, absolutely. Even anybody who hasn't been through the programme and they would like to try out the classes, they are more than welcome to give us a call at No Barriers Foundation or come in and try the classes, even with a family member at first, or if they'd like to give us a call and one of our coaches could have a conversation with them, bring them through the building.
And you're based in
Pine Hill Studios,
Lettercanny, not far from us here.
Yeah,
okay, brilliant stuff.
Corner.
Okay, anything, Andrea or David, that you want to add? I think we went through quite a bit there.
I think we're really delighted to have had this opportunity to build this programme and deliver on it. And
I think the fact that you can talk of maybe it having an impact nationally,
yes,
or can be adapted to a one-on-one, or it seems you've created something potentially really quite important here.
Yeah, it's a therapy-informed model. Mm. A lot of people are sitting on waiting lists, not able to get in, mm-hmm, having access to one-to-one therapy. So this program was created to support people to build skill sets in physical activity and everyday living activities, so yeah, they can make choices and increase their quality of life, increase their longevity, and give them opportunities to choose healthy lifestyles. So it's about taking this a little bit further. As David says, it doesn't end when the program finishes after, yeah, 6 weeks. It really begins.
Brilliant.
This is where we want people to come back, come into our classes, yeah, or come into a one-to-one session. So it's really the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, including everybody in our
society.
There's
no barriers, sums it up, no really, barriers, doesn't it? That, that's, yeah, it's a great name for that reason. There should be no barriers for anyone. All right, brilliant stuff, Andrea and David. So if anyone wants to ask any questions about what we've been speaking about, Andrea, just to make sure I'm as clear as possible, what's the best way to get more info?
So give Donegal Down Syndrome Association a call, or you can give us a call at No Barriers Foundation. We'd
lovely
be delighted
stuff
to speak to you.
All right. Clearly, Andrea, I can, yeah, sense that from you. Thank you so very much indeed. Andrea McFeely, Clinical Lead and Coordinator of DS Champions Programme at No Barriers, and David Hone, who's the Activities Lead on the DS Champion programme. Both of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Now, you might remember going back a couple of weeks, we were on the issue of road safety, and this was focusing on a route. Mary T might help me out on this. Mary T Sweeney ain't too Donegal rep. Drumkeen to Old Town down at Kenny, would that be the easiest way for everyone to sort of get an idea of what we're talking about?
Many just call it, Greg, the back road to Balbuffet. It takes you up to Drumkeen just before Rosie Bonner's pub,
yeah,
there on the main boy, Trenta Boy.
Right, so the last time we were talking about Listack Junction, and it was quite frosty at that time, bit of snow about, and there had been a collision or two there. Another collision, this time no weather to blame.
No weather to blame. And also, Greg, more importantly, no signposts for the people coming up. They didn't realise that the road was going to continue on straight. They thought the road was going to continue on straight, I beg your pardon, but there's actually, yeah, they were coming onto a main junction. And two cars rolled off. One lady's in hospital. Hopefully, please God, she'll do okay, but seemed to have a broken nose. And it was, but both cars, it was a huge impact. I was sitting here working at the computer and I just heard a massive bang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And by nobody's fault, because it's such a blind junction. And there's lorries using it, all the quarry lorries use it, there's buses on it. You know, it really has become an extremely busy road.
Yeah.
And it brought to mind the fact that signposts had been knocked down at one of the previous accidents, way back maybe even last year. The number of people that have contacted me about lack of signage, and it's one of those key factors we take for granted. So this is an opportunity for the Donegal County Council, and I would suggest to listeners, if there's a dangerous sign in your area, please photograph it with your location on your phone, and forward it into the Donegal County Council and say, please prioritise this junction because we're seeing accidents. And what one of the guards had, one of the people working said to me, is that, you know, that to make it an official complaint, you need to get the pulse number and get that pulse number and forward that to the council to show that there's a repeat of accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Because they phoned in the accident, the guard said he knew exactly where to come because of the number of times he's been up here.
That's worrying. Stay with me, obviously, Mary T. I want to bring Kathleen in, a local resident on the Rahn Road. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. From your perspective, what have you seen in terms of, I suppose, the volume of traffic on this road?
Yes, the volume of traffic, Greg, has, over the last few years, has gone to an uncountable amount. That is the easy way of putting it. People are using this road at all hours of the day and night. Very recently, I left my home to go to Letterkenny around 4 o'clock in the evening. And I was going into Letterkenny 4 o'clock, which is not peak. By no means is that peak time, mm-hmm, at all for this road, as Mary T said, the volume of traffic. And from where I left, which is about 4.5 kilometres until I got, as we know it, as Old Town, I met 46 vehicles coming out of Letterkenny.
Wow.
Now, I have asked and commented on a few occasions for the County Council to please put a tracker on the road to see the volume of the traffic, along with the signage. I totally agree with Mary T about signage, yes, but the volume of traffic, Greg, is beyond at this stage of the game. People are afraid coming out of their junctions of their properties at certain times of the day because there is no... It's an 80-kilometre road, and the road surface at the moment from the forestry down, which is Brisjack, to a good part of Letterkenny, on the Letterkenny side, has gone terrible. It needs total repair. It is, the road surface itself is dangerous. It's corroding on the middle of the road, the sides of the road, everywhere. And there has been a few accidents that hasn't been reported, as Mary T said. You know what I mean? People have had accidents. Vehicles have gone into hedges. People have got a family member come, pull them out and whatever. No guards needed. So they didn't report it to the guards. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that has happened on countless occasions. If something is not done and not done to slow down and for them to register the volume of traffic, there will be somebody killed. That is the way it is at the minute. It's at the stage now that unless they get a counter to see the volume of traffic and they do something about the surface of the road and the signage, people will be killed on this road.
Okay, Kathleen, thank
Which
you
Which I don't
that.
Want anybody to happen to anybody.
No, no, stay you where know, you are. That's a really important point, isn't it, Mary T, that Kathleen has made there? I mean, how can you allocate funding or resources or what have you unless you know how busy a road is? And the most simplest way would be to listen to locals' concerns, gauge the amount of traffic on it. There's very little excuse for not having proper signage because, you know, there are three contributing factors at least to a road traffic collision. A, the condition of the vehicle. B, which there's a great focus on what the driver is doing. But C, and it's not talked about enough, even though I try and raise it on this show, the condition of the road and the availability of signage of stuff. That is a key plank of what can cause road traffic collisions. And there's a responsibility here from the local authority or the TII, whomever may be responsible, to ensure that they're keeping up their side of the bargain on that third strand of contributing factors.
And exactly, Greg, I couldn't agree with you more. And getting back to what Kathleen says, the residents are in a compromised position because there are so many multiple accidents here that didn't require the guards or an ambulance, but there was significant damage to vehicles. You don't want to have to phone the guards to get a pulse number to let the council see how serious this is. A great example of the council is we had highlighted the Cranford to Carrigart Road. There was a very serious drop and a number of cars had gone off it. The council did a fantastic job. They came up and put up a big screen, a big barrier to prevent somebody getting killed going down this embankment. But the locals are now saying it's making people drive out in the middle of the road more because they're afraid of the barrier, and the white lines are gone on Milford, on the Cranford to Carrigart Road. So there's another area that, again, local knowledge is paramount to making sure that there's not an accident because, again, there's an embankment there and it's quite narrow. So things like that, they need a facility to address the feedbacks from the community when something's happening. And it's not a master scheme. It's just a common sense approach.
But Kathleen, from your perspective as a local resident, at the end of the day, you know, you could put all the counters on the road. You know how busy it is. Even if that,
Yeah, exactly.
So even if that road were resurfaced and proper signage up, you're starting to see an awful lot of traffic on a road that wasn't designed for it at all. So, you know, even if we get a sense of what the crack is, what do you think needs to be done to that road? Because I can't imagine traffic not using it now going forward with the way Letterkenny's developing.
No. That is the thing about it, Greg. You know what I mean? I'm no engineer, but to see the volume of the traffic and to upgrade the surface of the road and to put up signage would be a massive help. After that, it's an engineer's decision.
Yeah.
But if he has it in paper in front of him, the volume of traffic, the state of the road surface and the signage put up, then that's him. It's his baby then to work on it. No disrespect, Greg.
No,
he would be better qualified than I. You know, and it can't be that big a deal for the council to put a tripwire on the road to count it.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
They did it, sorry, Greg, they did it about 12 years ago. It was done then. now, 12 years ago to 2024, is a different situation. This road, people have found it when there was roadworks on the main Balbuffet to Letterkenny Road, and when they were doing the main Letterkenny Road in. Do you know what I mean? And people are using this road. It's a cut-through road. There is no negotiating on it. You can cut through to Balbuffet on two different directions if you choose to do so. Mm-hmm. So it is a road that is used every day. I would personally like to see the volume of the traffic sorted, as in knowing what is the volume of the traffic, sort the road surface, definitely needs upgrading ASAP because it is a danger, and ASAP, all the signage.
Okay.
Because if you put into Google Maps and you're not from the area, the quickest way to Letterkenny, that's the road it takes you.
Yeah, indeed. And that's what we were talking about the last time. Kathleen, listen, thank you so very much for your time. Mary T as well, thank you for rejoining us on this issue. And we'll make our inquiries to the council as well to see if they're going to listen to the demands of yourself and local residents like Kathleen, though you're a local resident as well as an N2 rep. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Take
Greg.
Care.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much indeed.